Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me today on the Class War Battlefield podcast. Please do me the honor of supporting this work that I am doing. I've been doing this work now for free on your behalf for, my God, 11 years. 5, 10, 20, 50. If you can afford it, please do. Cash at me at $CWB Podcast. CWB Podcast. Cash App it. CWB Podcast. Also, hit me up on PayPal. CWB Podcast. All the way across the board, y'all. Help me out. Thank you for donating and enjoy the show.
Good afternoon. Today, as of noon, almost half of the federal government employees are idle. The government is partially shutting down because Congress has failed to pass the straightforward legislation necessary to keep the government running without imposing sharp hikes in Medicare premiums and deep cuts in education and the environment. It is particularly unfortunate that the Republican Congress has brought us to this juncture because, after all, we share a central goal, balancing the federal budget. We must lift the burden of debt that threatens the future of our children and grandchildren, and we must free up money so that the private sector can invest, create jobs, and our economy can continue its healthy growth. Since I took office, we have cut the federal deficit nearly in half. It is important that the people of the United States know that the United States now has proportionally the lowest government budget deficit of any large industrial nation. We have eliminated 200,000 positions from the federal bureaucracy since I took office. Our federal government is now the smallest percentage of the civilian workforce it has been since 1933, before the New Deal. We have made enormous progress, and now we must finish the job. Let me be clear. We must balance the budget. I proposed to Congress a balanced budget, but Congress refused to enact it. Congress has even refused to give me the line item veto to help me achieve further deficit reduction. But we must balance this budget without resorting to their priorities. Without their unwise cuts in Medicare and Medicaid, in education and the environment. 5 months ago, I proposed my balanced budget plan. It balances the budget in the right way. It cuts hundreds of wasteful and outdated programs, but it upholds our fundamental values to provide opportunity, to respect our obligations to our parents and our children, to strengthen families, and to strengthen America. Because it preserves Medicare and Medicaid, it invests in education and technology, it protects the environment, and it gives the tax cuts to working families for child rearing and for education. Unfortunately, Republican leaders in Washington have put ideology ahead of common sense and shared values in their pursuit of a budget plan. We can balance the budget without doing what they seek to do. We can balance the budget without the deep cuts in education, without the deep cuts in the environment, without letting Medicare wither on the vine, without imposing tax increases on the hardest-pressed working families in America. I am fighting for a balanced budget that is good for America and consistent with our values. If they'll give me the tools, I'll balance the budget. I vetoed the spending bill sent to me by Congress last night because America can never accept under pressure what it would not accept in free and open debate. I strongly believe their budget plan is bad for America. I believe it will undermine opportunity, make it harder for families to do the work that they have to do, weaken our obligations to our parents and our children, and make our country more divided. So I will continue to fight for the right kind of balanced budget. Remember, the Republicans are following a very explicit strategy announced last April by Speaker Gingrich to use the threat of a government shutdown to force America to accept their cuts in Medicare and Medicaid, to accept their cuts in education and technology and the environment. Yesterday, they sent me legislation that said, we will only keep the government going and we will only let it pay its debts if and only if we accept their cuts in Medicare, their cuts in education, their cuts in the environment, and their repeal of 25 years of bipartisan commitments to protect the environment and public health. On behalf of the American people, I said no. If America has to close down access to education, to a clean environment, to affordable health care, to keep our government open, then the price is too high. My message is to Congress is simple. You say you want to balance the budget. So let's say yes to balancing the budget. But let us together say no to these deep and unwise cuts in education, technology, the environment, Medicare, and Medicaid. Let's say no to raising taxes on the hardest-pressed working families in America. These things are not necessary to balance the budget. Yes to balancing the budget, no to the cuts. I know the loss of government service will cause disruption in the lives of millions of Americans. We will do our very best to minimize this hardship. But there is, after all, a simple solution to the problem. All Congress has to do is to pass a straightforward bill to let government perform its duties and pay its debts. Then we can get back to work and resolve our differences over the budget in an open, honest, and straightforward manner. Before I conclude, I'd like to say a word to the hundreds of thousands of federal employees who will be affected by this partial shutdown. I know, as your fellow citizens know, that the people who are affected by this shutdown are public servants. They're the people who process our Social Security applications, help our veterans apply for benefits, care for the national parks that are our natural heritage. They conduct the medical research that saves people's lives. They are important to America, and they deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. I will do everything I can to see that they receive back pay and that their families do not suffer because of this. But it is my solemn responsibility to stand against a budget plan that is bad for America and to stand up for a balanced budget that is good for America. And that is exactly what I intend to do. Thank you very much.
7 years or longer? 7 year plan, sir?
You think you'll get a settlement today?
Good morning, everybody. At midnight last night, for the first time in 17 years, the Republicans in Congress chose to shut down the federal government. Let me be more specific. One faction of one party in one House of Congress, in one branch of government, shut down major parts of the government, all because they didn't like one law. This Republican shutdown did not have to happen, but I want every American to understand why it did happen. Republicans in the House of Representatives refused to fund the government unless we defunded or dismantled the Affordable Care Act. They've shut down the government over an ideological crusade to deny affordable health insurance to millions of Americans. In other words, they demanded ransom just for doing their job. And many representatives, including an increasing number of Republicans, have made it clear that had they been allowed by Speaker Boehner to take a simple up or down vote on keeping the government open, with no partisan strings attached, enough votes from both parties would have kept the American people's government open and operating. Now, we may not know the full impact of this Republican shutdown for some time. It will depend on how long it lasts. But we do know a couple of things. We know that the last time Republicans shut down the government in 1996, it hurt our economy. And unlike 1996, our economy is still recovering from the worst recession in generations. We know that certain services and benefits that America's seniors and veterans and business owners depend on must be put on hold. Certain offices, along with every national park and monument, must be closed. And while last night I signed legislation to make sure our 1.4 million active duty military are paid through the shutdown, hundreds of thousands of civilian workers, many still on the job, many forced to stay home, aren't being paid, even if they have families to support and local businesses that rely on them. And we know that the longer this shutdown continues, the worse the effects will be. More families will be hurt, more businesses will be harmed. So once again, I urge House Republicans to reopen the government, restart the services Americans depend on, and allow the public servants who have been sent home to return to work. This is only going to happen when Republicans realize they don't get to hold the entire economy hostage over ideological demands. As I've said repeatedly, I am prepared to work with Democrats and Republicans to do the things we need to do to grow the economy and create jobs and get our fiscal house in order over the long run. Although I should add, this shutdown isn't about deficits or spending or budgets. After all, our deficits are falling at the fastest pace in 50 years. We've cut them in half since I took office. In fact, many of the demands the Republicans are now making would actually raise our deficits. So no, this shutdown is not about deficits. It's not about budgets. This shutdown is about rolling back our efforts to provide health insurance to folks who don't have it. It's all about rolling back the Affordable Care Act. This, more than anything else, seems to be what the Republican Party stands for these days. I know it's strange that one party would make keeping people uninsured the centerpiece of their agenda, but that apparently is what it is. And of course, what's stranger still is that shutting down our government doesn't accomplish their stated goal. The Affordable Care Act is a law that passed the House, it passed the Senate, the Supreme Court ruled it constitutional. It was a central issue in last year's election. It is settled, and it is here to stay. And because of its funding sources, it's not impacted by a government shutdown. And these Americans are here with me today because, even though the government is closed, a big part of the Affordable Care Act is now open for business. And for them, and millions like them, this is a historic day for a good reason. It's been a long time coming. But today, Americans who have been forced to go without insurance can now visit healthcare.gov and enroll in affordable new plans that offer quality coverage. That starts today. And people will have 6 months to sign up. So over the next 6 months, people are going to have the opportunity, in many cases for the first time in their lives, to get affordable coverage that they desperately need. Now, of course, if you're one of the 85% of Americans who already have health insurance, you don't need to do a thing. You're already benefiting from new benefits and protections that have been in place for some time under this law. But for the 15% of Americans who don't have health insurance, this opportunity is life-changing.
Chuck, did you want to say something?
Yeah, here's what I want to say. We have a lot of disagreements here. The Washington Post today gave you a whole lot of Pinocchios because they say you constantly misstate how much the wall is built, how much of the wall is built, and how much is there. But that's not the point here. We have a disagreement about the wall, whether it's effective or whatever. Not on border security, but on the wall. We do not want to shut down the government. You have called 20 times to shut down the government. You say, I want to shut down the government. We don't. We want to come to an agreement. If we can't come to an agreement, we have solutions that will pass the House and Senate right now and will not shut down the government, and that's what we're urging you to do. Not threaten to shut down the government because you, let me just finish, because you can't get your way.
The last time you shut it down, you
got
killed.
Yeah, let me say something, Mr. President. You just say, my way or we'll shut down the government. We have a proposal that Democrats and Republicans will support to do a CR that will not shut down the government. We urge you to take it.
And if it's not good border security, I won't take it.
It is very good border security.
And if it's not good border security, I won't take it.
It's what the
border... Because when you look at these numbers, of the effectiveness of our border security. And when you look at the job that we're doing
with
our military...
You just said it is effective.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah, you just said it's
effective. Without a wall, these are only areas where you have the walls.
We want to do
this. Where you have walls, Chuck, it's effective. Where you don't have walls, it is not effective.
Yeah.
Let's call a halt to this. We've come in here as the first branch of government. Article 1, the legislative branch. We're coming in good faith to negotiate with you about how we can keep the government
open.
We're going to keep it open if we have border security. If we don't have border security, Chuck, we're not going to keep it open.
I'm with you. We are going to have border security.
And it's the same border. You're bragging about what has been done.
By us.
We want to do the same thing we did last year, this year. That's our proposal. If it's good then, it's good now, and it won't shut down the government.
Chuck, we can build a much bigger section
with
more
money. Let's debate in private. Okay? Yeah. Let's debate in private.
Devoid, frankly, of fact, and we can...
We need border security, and I think we all agree that we need border security.
Yes, we do.
Good.
We do.
See? We get along. Thank you, everybody.
Say border security and the wall. Can you have border security without the wall?
You need the wall. The wall is a part of border security.
What it means to have border security.
Yeah. Yes. We need border security. The wall is a part of border security. You can't have very good border security without the wall.
That's absolutely not true. That is a political promise. Border security is a way to effectively honor our responsibility.
And the experts say you can do border security without a wall, which is wasteful and doesn't solve the problem.
It totally solves
but
the problem.
I don't want to take this.
And it's very important.
This has spiraled downward when we came at a place to say, how do we meet the needs of American people who have needs? The economy has, people are losing their jobs, the market's in a mood. Our members are already...
Well, we have the lowest unemployment that we've had in 50 years.
60 people of the Republican Party are losing their offices now because of the transition. People are not... The morale
and we've gained in the Senate. Nancy, we've gained in the Senate. Excuse me, did we win the Senate? We won the Senate.
When the president brags that he won North Dakota and Indiana, he's in real trouble.
When
I did.
Let me say this.
We did win North Dakota and Indiana.
This is the most unfortunate thing. We came in here in good faith, and we're entering into a discussion in the public view.
But it's not bad, Nancy.
No.
It's called transparency.
I know. It's not transparency when we're not stipulating to a set of facts and when we want to have a debate with you about saying we confront some of those facts without...
You know what? We need border security. That's what we're going to be talking about, border security. If we don't have border security, we'll shut down the government. This country needs border security. The wall is a part of border security. Let's have a talk. We're going to get the wall built, and we've done a lot of wall already.
How big a part of border security is the wall?
It's a big section. It's a big part of it.
Is it everything that you need?
It's a big part of it. We need to have effective border security. We need a wall in certain parts. No, not in all parts, but in certain parts of a 2,000-mile border, we need a wall.
How much money?
We are doing it much under budget. We're actually way under budget on the areas that we've renovated and areas that we've built. I would say if we got $5 billion, we could do a tremendous chunk of wall.
Are you willing to accept less, though, and are your guests...
Well, we're going to see. Look, we have to have the wall. This isn't a question. This is a national emergency. Drugs are pouring into our country. People with tremendous medical difficulty and medical problems are pouring in, and in many cases, it's contagious. They're pouring into our country. We have to have border security. We have to have a wall as part of border security. And I don't think we really disagree so much. I also know that, you know, Nancy's in a situation where it's not easy for her to talk right now. And I understand that. And I fully understand that. We're going to have a good discussion, and we're going to see what happens. But we have to have border security.
Mr. President, please don't characterize the strength that I bring to this meeting as the leader of the House Democrats who just won a big victory.
Elections have consequences, Mr. President.
Let me just say...
That's right. And that's why the country is doing so well.
What the President is representing in terms of his cards over there are not factual. We have to have an evidence-based conversation about what does work, what money has been spent, and how effective it is. This is about the security of our country, to take an oath to protect and defend. And we don't want to have that mischaracterized by anyone.
I agree with
it. So let us have a conversation where we don't have to contradict in public to statistics that you put forth, but instead can have a conversation about what will really work and what the American people deserve from us at this uncertain time in their lives.
The one thing I think we can agree on is we shouldn't shut down the government over a dispute. And you want to shut it down. You keep talking about it.
The last time, Chuck, you shut it down.
No.
And then you opened it up very quickly. And
20 times.
I don't want to do what you did.
20 times, Chuck, you have called for, I will shut down the government if I don't get my wool. None of us have
said. You want to know something?
You've said
it. Okay, you want to put that on my...
You've said it.
I'll take it.
Okay, good.
You know what I'll say? Yes. If we don't get what we want, one way or the other, whether it's through you, through a military, through anything you want to call, I will shut down the government.
Okay,
absolutely.
Fair enough.
And
we
I am
disagree.
Proud, and I'll
we
tell
disagree.
You what, I am proud to shut down the government for border security, Chuck, because the people of this country don't want criminals and people that have lots of problems and drugs pouring into our country. So I will take the mantle. I will be the one to shut it down. I'm not going to blame you for it. The last time you shut it down, it didn't work. I will take the mantle
Good.
Of shutting down.
That is
and I'm going to shut it down for border security.
But we
security.
Believe you shouldn't okay. shut it down.
Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
Saturday, the 30th, remains the deadline for the budget deal. They could, in theory, pass a continuing resolution, which is the short-term spending stopgap bill that you may have heard that term before in reference to these standoffs. In theory, they could pass one of those to punt it a month or two towards the end of the year to making these decisions. But there is a group of hardline freaks that include Matt Gaetz who refuse to do such a thing. We'll hear from him in a second. But on the other side of things, there are 18 House Republicans who are representing districts that Biden won in 2020. And those 18 Republicans are the subject of much pressure and focus by the Democrats in terms of getting them to be in uncomfortable positions because their districts are not going to look too kindly upon the Republican Party shutting down the government over It concerns that are both completely inauthentic and also so far from the mind of the average voter that it will not make a difference. I mean, Republicans are traditionally blamed, as they should be, for these government shutdown situations. They're also often blamed for their shenanigans when in the voting booths, I should say, blamed by voters for things like the impeachment inquiry into Bill Clinton, which most people thought was BS. I predict a very similar response to the efforts to impeach Biden over a crime that they haven't even been able to name as it relates to his son, Hunter. They're just flailing here. They're in disarray. And McCarthy's speakership is certainly in question right now. And someone like Matt Gaetz here, he does not care because he has no principles except for chaos and anti-government rhetoric. And if you don't like the government and you think the government should be hampered, then shutting it down, you have no ideological opposition to that. Even if a lot of people get hurt along the way, even if government workers stop receiving their paychecks for a period of time, even if there are hits to the economy, what have you. But Maria Bartiromo on her show on Fox had a monologue on her Sunday show speaking about the looming government shutdown. And she also spoke to Jim Jordan, who mentioned that he thinks that the Republicans should pass a continuing resolution, and then focus on just one area, the southern border, to negotiate with Democrats on. This was Gaetz's response, I think, later in that same show, after hearing what Bartiromo and Jordan had to say at the start of it. And this is just kind of how extreme he is. He's even further to the right and more nihilistic than Maria Bartiromo and Jim Jordan.
Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz. Congressman, thank you very much for being here this morning. Oh, thank you. I'm glad I get to respond to your monologue, because if you're saying that I'm standing in the way of all the Republican wins, I'd love you to enumerate them. Watching my friend and mentor, Jim Jordan, it was quite painful, because he started by saying we should only pick one fight, the border. But then as the interview went on, he said, well, we should pick a second fight, Jack Smith. And by the time the interview rounded out, he was saying that we shouldn't be funding Ukraine without a plan. And yet the very continuing resolution that you and Jim Jordan seem to be for continues to have $300 million more for Ukraine. So I think we ought to fight on all fronts. I think the border is very important. And the best way for us to advance the Republican border policies is to pass the Department of Homeland Security Appropriations Bill, do that along with veterans, defense, ag, state and foreign ops. We'll have 73% of the discretionary budget funded. And if, you know, the Department of Labor and Education have to shut down for a few days as we get their appropriations in line, that's certainly not something that is optimal. But I think it's better than continuing on the current path we are to America's financial ruin.
Congressman, I understand, and that is why you are on this program this morning, because I want to give you a fair shot and I want to get you heard. So tell me why you are threatening Speaker McCarthy and trying to shut down this government at a time that the Republicans have finally gotten some upper hands here in terms of wins, able to investigate President Biden on what looks like bribery.
Yeah, we don't put our pencils down
It's interesting. She must be close to somebody in the McCarthy orbit, because that's exactly what he would want to say publicly. The reason that they're doing this impeachment investigation into Biden is to attempt to appease the Gateses of
some
the world.
Red meat, yeah.
Right. And Gates is not having it.
They're McCarthy and Bartiromo are very close to the point where I don't know if you remember Tucker Carlson, there was a lot of speculation in their office that Bartiromo and McCarthy were having an affair.
Oh my God, was that from those texts?
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that. That explains, I mean, not that they're having an affair, but they're clearly close.
He goes on a lot, he has like priority, and she sort of really does hew to his line of thinking on a lot of this stuff.
That's very interesting, because she's lying on his behalf there.
Getting a Biden investigation is like giving the left oversight committee privileges. Like, oh, thanks, we can get some highlights out of this that go nowhere.
Right. So it's completely aesthetic. And McCarthy, you know, thought and prayed really that would be enough to appease the hardliners, but they're not having it. And then they're not having it as well if he chooses to circumvent that group of six or so who are saying absolutely no and work with Democrats. Then they're saying that they would remove him from the speakership. So this is the kind of nonsense that everybody is dealing with here. It's not a stretch to say that those members led by Gates, that handful of people or two handfuls, are holding the entire government hostage. But this is the Republicans. All right, keep going.
Some upper hands here in terms of wins, able to investigate President Biden on what looks like bribery.
Yeah, we don't put our pencils down in the investigation of President Biden during a shutdown, so the premise is false. Second, if Kevin McCarthy was actually serious about pursuing the Bidens, he would have sent Hunter Biden a subpoena by now. That's how you know this is sort of failure theater that you're observing. During the first year of Democrat control of the Congress, they brought in Donald Trump Jr. three times over a nothing burger. And so we seem to be fundamentally unserious in our oversight, but what is serious is the fact that we are spending more than $7 trillion a year, bringing in around $5 trillion a year. And I want to fund the government. I'm not pro shutdown, but the way to fund the government is
taxes.
Not the same way we've been doing it since the mid 90s, where it's one up or down vote on the entire government all at once. We should have separate single subject spending bills.
Taxes is how you fund the government. That's you want to balance the budget. It's fine. It's super simple. You raise taxes on the wealthy, and then we don't have to cut anything whatsoever. And we can all just we can fund all of the programs that we need to make people's lives easier and then some. But they create a completely false premise of what we can do or can't do. It's either cut spending, or we're on the road to fiscal irresponsibility. How about we raise taxes and then we don't have to do anything of the sort? But the problem here is that McCarthy, in theory, at least signed off on this agreement in May as a part of the debt ceiling bill, which put in place this framework for the negotiations surrounding the budget a few months later. And there were all of these kind of triggers in the Fiscal Responsibility Act, which is what they ended up calling it, when Biden worked with Republicans on this matter to get them to pass these appropriations bills and not just do continuing resolutions. And it cuts both ways a bit. But the reality is that they're not close to passing any of that dozen of appropriations bills. They're not close in any manner. And so if the continuing resolution is off the table, that means a shutdown is essentially imminent. And look, it's the Freedom Caucus that forced McCarthy into a position where he reneged on that deal. And since they were the ones who were liars, Biden should not work with them on this whatsoever. He already worked with them on the debt ceiling when we didn't even need to do so. They could have, you could have forced the Republicans into an uncomfortable position there. Now, especially when they're trying to demand all of these cuts, do not work with them on anything. Give them enough rope to hang themselves and have them hash this out. Because the more chaos that's in the Republican Party, the better that is for the Democratic Party, especially when you have Biden at the top of the ticket, who doesn't inspire anything in the average voter. I think if I were to guess right now, if it's Trump versus Biden in 2024, the negative partisanship about Trump, I would hope, is enough to carry Biden over the finish line. But Biden should not take that for granted by any means. That's why it's a good thing that he's going to the picket lines tomorrow to support UAW workers. And it would be a good thing for him to promote chaos within the Republican Party. They're already doing a good job of it themselves. The Freedom Caucus is refusing to engage with anything involving a short-term spending gap, a continuing resolution. And that's part of what Gaetz was responding to there in relation to Jim Jordan's comments. But even the proposed continuing resolutions from these Republicans would die in the Senate, which is controlled by Democrats. So it really is a complete mess at this point. And it's a mess of the Republicans doing. It's important that the Democratic Party communicate that to the public.
Class war, class war, class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
My attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your brother, Vladimir Deese. Oh, God, yeah. And welcome to this emergency episode of Class War Battlefield Podcast. I don't even know what to say. I really don't know what to say. This shutdown, this government shutdown, has been on my mind. I found a old episode that I never published from, I think it was 2013, 2012, when the Republicans were threatening to shut down the government on Barack Obama. And though it was not a very decent episode, which is why I didn't publish it, I had forgotten that I had recorded it. I came across it while looking for another file I had recorded. And suddenly it kind of struck me. In my life, this idea of shutting down the government by Republicans Let me underscore that notion again. Shutting down the government by Republicans has become normalized. In my mind, I still remember being 12 years old. I am 41 now. I still remember being 12 years old, listening to a morning show that I used to like to listen to, and them talking about the government shutting down. Newt Gingrich had just helped the Republicans take back the Congress. And one of the first things he wanted to do was shut the government down. I didn't know then, at 12 years old, that this was not normal. And there was a lot going on in my life which prevented me from going to my parents and asking, is this normal? My family was going through a lot of stuff at that time. But I didn't realize it wasn't normal. And indeed, every time the Republicans took back the Congress, government shutdown loomed as a possibility. And so it didn't occur to me until Donald Trump was president and the government shut down to actually ponder if this was natural, if this was normal. And then I read some articles which said, no, this was not normal, even though in my lifetime it had become normal. It's kind of, government shutdown is metaphorically the static manifestation of what Republicans, neoconservatives plan to do with the entire country. To shut it down, to break it apart, to shatter it, to make it inoperable. With every government shutdown that they have threatened, that they have followed through on, the demand has constantly been the same. Spending cuts for what they call entitlements, which are just social programs, the actual reason for government existing, they want those spending cuts cut down to nothing. They don't want spending cuts for the military. The military, the intelligence agencies, the police state agencies, which they supposedly are all against, they don't mind any of that. Bloat those budgets as much as you want. Give them trillions of dollars. Who cares? Can we afford it? Who cares? Give it to them. But if you spend a dollar on taking care of the populace, on trying to make the life of the populace better, to make it bearable, that's their problem. If you're spending a dollar on it, you're spending 100 cents too much. That's the fact. They have complained since I was in elementary school. Elementary school, ladies and gentlemen, I'm 41 years old. They have complained that the government spends too much on social programs and, quote, entitlements. Now, let's have a quick discussion about entitlements. Because I've pointed this out, but I want to underscore it here. When you mention entitlements, people get in their minds, because Republicans have done a really good job of defining this without defining it, they say entitlements are welfare. Well, since nobody really looks up words anymore, they have no clue that the idea of welfare is a positive one. The idea of welfare is to take someone's life
who is made, whose life has been made challenging by circumstances that are beyond their control, and despite what a lot of neoconservatives like to tell you, there is a larger portion of this society whose lives are shaped and molded and bent into proportions by forces that they cannot control. Those forces are called, wait for it, capitalist forces. Now, neoconservatives who like to argue constantly capitalism is the greatest system, but they do not like to acknowledge that some of those forces do not act great for a large portion of the population. They don't like to acknowledge that. When this is just historical fact, something else that neoconservatives are supposed to be really bound to. They're supposed to be about history. Welfare is meant to take those forces, which everybody in the Western world, except for the United States citizenry, seem to understand exists, and holds them off by direct intervention. That direct intervention is government regulating those forces. That's what regulation is about. Holding off those forces. Stopping those forces from doing the damage which is predictable. So if companies want to pay you less than a living wage, welfare programs come in and say, we are going to make sure that you have a living wage. Why is it that two-thirds, by the way, for those of you who do not like fractions, that 66%, why is it that 66%, in fact, it's over that, but I'm going to use something simple, 66% of Americans can't afford a $500 emergency because corporations haven't been paying them living wages for the last 40 years. But most specifically for the last 20, even though corporate profits have soared. Welfare programs come in and say, you don't want to pay them a living wage? Fine. We're going to fill in the gap so they can live comfortably. We're going to give them food stamps. We're going to give them cash assistance. And since you seem to be strapped with cash, or not strapped with cash, but you seem to be overabundantly a holder of cash because these people are coming in and making you tons of money from which you are paying your executives exorbitant amounts of money, but you are not paying them a living wage, we are going to tax you mightily so we can pay for the gap that you are creating in their lives. That's what we're going to do. That's how taxes help with welfare. Welfare connects to entitlements because a government's main job, the reason governments were enacted long ago, when people still lived in tribal groups, were one, to take all of the responsibilities of the natural needs that we all have, and to pool them together and to create institutions which could satisfy those needs. Now, most of those institutions were not like you and I think of today. They weren't institutions in the way of buildings and structures. No, these were institutions that we might call customs. They were passed on from generation to generation. To talk of entitlements to these people would have been to talk of common sense. You do not hope that every person in a large tribe could feed themselves when you have the tool of agriculture and you have the tool of herding. That's just dumb. That's a waste of time. So you create institutions which enable you to grow through agriculture enough food to herd enough animals so you can feed everybody. Now, is there going to be a price for that? Sure. But mainly the price is going to come in the form of you respecting the village, respecting the tribe, respecting the customs, and upholding them. And you may be good at spinning fabric. Well, they may be good at growing cotton, but they can't spin fabric. Well, you want to eat? Do us the favor of spinning the cotton that they pick and grow into fabric so that this person over here could make things from it. Or people could make clothing from it. Those were the early governments. They regulated, ooh, what a word, they regulated the balance within the community. They took your gifts, compiled them, and said, well, the community can use those gifts. So let's come together with those gifts and figure out how we can use those gifts to make life better for everybody. In the modern age, to talk of doing that is seen as mentally disturbed because neoconservatives have made you believe that the government's only job is to build a police state for corporations to do whatever they want. But let me get back to the entitlement thing. Because in the modern sense, and this is very important, ladies and gentlemen, this is very important. In a modern sense, entitlement has a legal definition. I'm not going to read it verbatim. I've done that before. But I am going to talk about it because it's important. The legal definition of entitlement is something that you legally have a right to because it's been passed to you by usually a previous generation, a mother, a father, an uncle, an aunt, a grandmother, a grandfather. But it is something that you legally have a right to. The person who is passing it to you has amassed it for you. They've cared for it. It's almost like an endowment they give to you free of charge for your usage. For your usage. In the modern day, conservatives have taken the idea of this concept, which they seek to protect when they talk about the death tax. Remember when they were obsessed with the death tax, which would have taken a chunk of the estates of these very wealthy people when they died so they couldn't just pass it off to their children? That's an entitlement that they were talking about. They were making the argument that, well, it's not right. These people made that money. They should be able to pass it on to their offspring. What they were saying was those rich people's offspring were entitled to the entitlement that was created by the previous generation. But they didn't call those things entitlements, even though that's what they were. I want you, though, to flow with me here, to think now about this concept of entitlements. Not how conservatives, neoconservatives, and Republicans have told you to think of it, but in the legal sense that I just described it. So let's talk about entitlements from the standpoint of something that is passed on generation to generation, because we are actually seeing the decay of institutions within the United States because that generational transfer, that intergenerational, that transgenerational transfer has been severely restricted and disrupted over the last 30 years. To understand, and I'm not sure if y'all can hear the rain. It's raining outside, got the windows open. To understand this, though, we have to look briefly at the Great Depression and what came out of the Great Depression. Obviously, the Great Depression sparked the New Deal. What came out of the Great Depression was a restructuring of the American economy, the economic infrastructure in the United States, so that it more favored the average person. The result of that was a discussion, a constant discussion from the 50s into the 60s and briefly in the 70s of to what extent that economic infrastructure should be tweaked for the benefit of the average person. When LBJ proposed his Great Society, he was pulling on the established rungs, the established strings of the New Deal. He wanted to take what had been started in the New Deal and to build upon it. In short, and by the way, this is in the 60s, the New Deal programs were obviously in the 30s. The economic infrastructure restructuring was in the 30s and in the 40s. We don't typically talk about those things. This is actually very important because when talking about entitlements, you have two choices that you have to make as a person who is giving out the entitlement. There's a choice the person receiving it has to make, but the person who is giving out the entitlement, in other words, the person who has amassed the wealth that they are bequeathing to you or to a person, to another person, typically a family member, has to make the decision on how they want to disperse that wealth. Do they want it to be immediate, meaning you can go to the well one time, or do they want it to be continuous so it continually feeds you? Then the person who is receiving it has to decide whether or not that entitlement is going to be utilized to build further wealth, which usually that goes without saying, or if the entitlement mostly is going to go for their livelihood, so the person could live a balanced life. When FDR created the New Deal, he put down a foundation in which he expected other generations to take from and to build upon. He did not foresee what he was given to those generations as being a one-time deal. This was an endowment that was to be continuous. LBJ took a look at what FDR did and what FDR had given to the next generation and said, we are going to take that and we are going to maximize it so it can be utilized continuously, but we're also going to build upon it. Something that is rarely talked about in this country is how wealth
is regenerated to produce more and greater wealth. Entitlements are usually built around the idea of creating more and greater wealth. And there is a difference between more and greater wealth. More could be passive. I was just talking about passive income with a young man the other day. But greater wealth, you have to engage with that. That has to be an active thing. Ask Mitt Romney about greater wealth. His father was wealthy, significantly wealthy. Mitt Romney could have been a passive wealth generator. He decided to be active with it. When we're looking at the government, though, the government, prior to the Great Depression, was really passive when it came to wealth generation for the average person. The second Great Depression, the first one was in the 1800s, the 1890s, the second Great Depression pushed the statesmen, because they were all men except for a few of them, to become more active with wealth generation for the average American. The entitlement programs that they begin to build were not in the structure of being restrictive, but they expected these things to be continuous because the needs that they were solving, according to the how capitalism had already manifested itself throughout the previous 150 plus years, those needs were continuous. LBJ understood this and sought to take some of those continuous needs and solve them completely. Because it was understood that if they had allowed the, quote, free market to do what the free market did, they had evidence which seemed to suggest the free market would not solve these problems but exacerbate them. Thus, universal health care was needed. High quality, low cost, rent controlled housing was needed. Sound familiar? Price controls were needed to prevent corporations from being too greedy. Enforced competition was needed to prevent monopolization and conglomerization. Those are actually two different things. Strict worker regulation was needed to prevent injuries and to make sure that injuries sustained during work were cared for. Unemployment insurance, easy access to unemployment insurance was mandated and necessary because of the instability of the, quote, labor markets, the job markets within capitalism that had been revealed over the past X amount of decades. He understood this. Richard Nixon understood this too. So did Nixon's vice president, who became President Ford. So didn't Carter, to an extent. But you know who also understood it, but didn't care? Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was the first president in the modern era to take a look at entitlements. Something that wealthy people would go to bat to protect for their children. He was the first person to look at those entitlements and say, every average American does not deserve the same comfortability in life that the wealthy has. Which, by the way, in case it wasn't obvious, and I haven't said this before, that was the real purpose of these programs. To make the comfortability of life necessary for the average worker. This was promised by the capitalists back in the 1800s and the 1700s. You let us make all the money we want, and we will create the life. We will create a life that is comfortable and sustainable for every man, woman, and child. They lied. And a person like FDR, having been in the rooms with these people lying, realized it and ran on it. Back to the modern day. When we think about entitlements, we must think about them in these terms. We cannot be fooled any longer to believe that entitlements are anything but programs that were built by one generation to solve issues that were innate in the capitalist system so that preceding generations wouldn't be harmed by those issues, by those problems, by those built-in mechanisms. That is what entitlements are. And the reason they are so worried about government becoming, quote, large, isn't, because they are afraid that it's going to intrude in everybody's life. It is because deep down inside, they know and they can acknowledge that the truth of capitalism demands a strong centralized force that keeps it heavily regulated. That's why they're afraid of it. They realize that capitalism over the last 300 years has mandated that a regulatory force equal to its power be in existence to protect the average citizens from the harms that are innate to capitalism, that are inherent in its design. That is why they're so afraid of it. That is why they talk constantly about big government. Note, government is not big when corporations are spending billions of dollars to lobby government to do what the corporation wants them to do. Government isn't big when corporations are doing that. Government is only big when government doesn't do what corporations want it to do 100% of the time. Every time government says, no, we think we need to work this thing out for the average person, suddenly it's too big. It's too gigantic. But it wasn't that big when George W. Bush was there, was it? No, because corporations had it in. They can go in and do whatever they wanted to. But suddenly, as soon as Barack Obama was sworn in, government became big again. Donald Trump? Oh, government's big, but Donald Trump is slashing it all over the place, so it doesn't matter because it's not really big when he's in office. But the moment Joe Biden put his hand on that Bible, oh, it's big again. Do y'all not understand the game they're playing? See, they have put so much time and effort into fooling you. Into fooling you. That you confuse their lies with truth. Because of how many times they have told it to you. You don't even try to explain away their lies. Because you think their lies are truth.
say words and you think you know what they mean because they tell you what they mean by giving you context. But the context is incorrect. The context serves their purpose. So you're getting the definition of the word wrong because they're giving it to you incorrectly. I started noticing this when I was in high school. But I really started noticing it when I was in my 20s. Now, as I'm watching what is happening, as I'm watching the unfolding of the government once again teetering on the edge of shutting down, I find myself astonished at the number of people who are still falling for the ignorance of what these people are saying. But then again, I'm not astonished. These people have literally spent tens of billions of dollars over the last 50 years to transplant real, honest, local media sources with these corporate-friendly media sources that feed ideological sludge into the heads of most, especially mid-American citizens. The reason you will not see many Democratic Congress people, unless they're drastically conservatives, in most of your middle American states, is because of the ideological sludge that has been pumped into the minds of those people. This is not to disrespect them. This is not to look down on them. This is not to say there's something fundamentally wrong with them. I'll leave that to Drift Glass and Blue Gal, because they know them. And I suspect I know them, and I suspect that they're quite right. But what it is to say is that at the end of every day, these people go to sleep in a sea, in an atmosphere, in a cocoon of conservative ideological nonsense that, if they would start to think deeply about what they're being told, they'll realize very quickly that what they're being told is not real or true. The fear of these people ever discovering that that's a fact, that what they're being told isn't true, is why there has been deliberate actions. And I'm trying to figure out how I want to say this. There has been deliberate actions to keep progressive radio stations, progressive media sources that are networked in those states from becoming planted there. But with a new generation rising, I have faith and I have hope that these trends are going to be broken. Now, this is an episode about the government shutdown, and I haven't really talked a ton about it except for at the beginning. I need y'all to really understand. I need you to focus here. Because even if the government does not shut down, we still have about a week or so to go. I'm recording this on September 24th, 2023. Even if it doesn't shut down, here's what I need you to realize. It almost did. And not only did it almost shut down, these people have revealed through Project 2025 and through their own statements in relationship to the shutdown that ultimately they are trying to kill the government's capacity to regulate capitalism in a way that will make it less harmful to you and me and our children, our nieces, our nephews, our friends, our neighbors. That is the aim. The idea of going after the entitlements within the government is not limited to so-called welfare. The idea of going after the administrative state is not limited to just what you think of as bureaucracy. Most of you don't even know what bureaucracy is. These ideas are built around depriving you and yours and those you love and the community that you care about. They are built around depriving you of comfort. Of comfort. Why is it the richest economy, the richest nation that has ever existed in the world? I'm not talking modern world, y'all. I'm talking historical world. Why is it that you can go to work for 40 or more hours a week and you still don't have that much comfort? That's planned. And what these people have made clear is the government's attempt to alleviate that stress, that pressure, to enable you to live better. That is their number one bugaboo. That is where their problem lies. They don't want you living comfortable. They want to shut down the government to prevent them from helping you live comfortable. And by the way, let me talk quickly about this idea of you becoming dependent on government. They would know something about that. Because the same folks who are talking about you becoming dependent on government giveaways are being paid by people who are often connected to lobbyist firms who do what? Make sure that their clients get paid by the government. They get contracts from the government. They get subsidies from the government. They get loopholes in the tax code from the government. They get paid all the time from the government. They know that it pays well. They also know that it's very beneficial. And for them, it's very addicting. Because ultimately, their payment isn't about anything more than making money. They know for you, though, government giveaways, which could manifest in various ways, including enabling you to work instead of 40 hours a week, 36 hours a week, and still get paid like you were working 40 hours. Or you get free health care, high quality health care, which would require the government to mandate the training of hundreds of thousands of new doctors, which would result in hundreds of billions of dollars going to universities, including black universities, which are strapped for cash a lot of the times. Or maybe some relief in your tax bill. I just recently published an episode on Ronald Reagan and used this beautiful video from 1981, I believe, in 1982, where it was discussing how Paterson, New Jersey residents were being affected by Ronald Reagan's Reaganomic plan. You should really check that out. You should really check it out. Because the issues that some people brought forward back then,
kind of came to pass. But I digress. The things that the government would give to you to help your life be comfortable, to be more comfortable, is different than what the corporations extract from the government. And these Congress people, they know that. They know it. And what they also know is, if you feel good about your life, yeah, seriously, you've listened to nothing else that I've said in the last 42 minutes nearly, listen to this. They know if you feel comfortable and good in your life, you are going to try to improve the lives of those around you. When people feel good about themselves and have a strong sense of self-worth and self-esteem and self-confidence and self-truth, which is not what you think it is, what was revealed in the 1960s was, when people feel that good about themselves, what do? They try to make their communities better. They try to make their country better. And this is what these people are ultimately afraid of. They realize if you are comfortable, you can see the problems around you, and you can actually start to do something about them. You want to know why a lot of these wealthy people can attack you? They can put money into media outlets that attack you? It's because they have the time and the resources to dedicate themselves to doing those things, whereas you don't. And you don't because corporations have decreed that you shouldn't have that time. And so you don't have that time. If this government does shut down, consider it a warning of what's coming in 2024. Even with us just brushing against it, consider it a warning of what's coming in 2024 if you allow these people to keep running this government. They will not stop until they destroy it, as well as the society that it has allowed to flourish around it. I'm not saying the government's perfect. Lord knows it's not, and as a black man, I can definitely tell you it isn't. But what I will tell you is this. The government that they envision, the United States once had. This was in the late 1800s. It was heavily fascistic before fascism was a real word. It was heavily, heavily tailored by the corporations. It heavily favored corporations. And it did more for the benefit of those corporations, which made it tyrannical often, than it did for the average person. It took people, average people, fighting those corporate forces to force the government to do different, to act different, to be different. We are now in a period of time where that fight is going to have to be picked up again. These folks want a government similar to that in the late 1800s. Unfortunately, they have done a lot of work to make that dream come true. And they are working very hard presently to prevent you from stopping them from making that dream come true. If you need any more, anything that'll make you, what's the word I'm looking for? If you need more ammunition, no, that's the wrong word. If you need more incentive to get up and to work to stop what is being forewarned by this government shutdown, read the book Project 2025, which you can get online. You can get it for free. And if you need more than that, I don't know really what to tell you. I hope that's enough. Questions, comments, concerns, you know, you can always reach out to me. I'm sorry if I sound a little nasally. I have a sinus infection, and I think I'm at the end of it. I'm hoping I'm at the end of it. And so it has been toying with my voice quite a bit recently. In fact, I was trying to produce a couple of these last week and the week before, and it just did not work out. I couldn't even get through 10 minutes of them. So, you know, I apologize if I sound this way. I'm hoping this is the end of it, but, you know, I'll have to see. Quickly, big shout out. Oh, wait a minute. Let me back up. If you want to support the work that I'm doing, CWB Podcast, you can hit me up on PayPal and on Cash App. I'm still on both. You know, throw me $5, $2, you know, $10, $20, $30, $50. If you got to put it down. If you are using the content that I'm putting out, and I know there's some of you who are using the content that I'm putting out, Hook me up. Other than that, big shout out to Dr. Oba Tshaka, one of the blackest, realest YouTube channels on YouTube presently. You know, reach, if you're, especially if you're black, you know, Dr. Oba Tshaka runs a show called the Dr. Oba Tshaka Show, OBATSHAKA. That's OBATSHAKA. And he's not disparaging towards white people too much, but the show really is built for black folks, and it's really one of the best shows on YouTube. So if you're black and you ain't checked it out, check it out. And give it a couple of episodes, because it's very information heavy. So check it out. Dr. Oba Tshaka Show. Big up to Black Power Media, the Remix Morning Show. They've been doing sporadic shows recently. I've uploaded a few of them to radioforall.net. And I will be getting back on that, but they've been doing shows sporadically. All of them have busy lives, and several of them are in academia, and things have gotten busy there. So big up to Remix Morning Show. I love them. They're actually, I consider them better than The Breakfast Club, because The Breakfast Club does some edgy stuff when it comes to politics and what have you, but the ideology isn't there. The ideology isn't there. For the Remix Morning Show, it is there. That's another very pro-black show. So, you know, slide in there if you want to, but just realize something. You're going to be listening to real black people talk about some stuff, okay? Next up, the Professional Left Podcast. I mentioned them earlier, Drift Class, Blue Gal. They also have No Fair Remembering Stuff podcast, and Science Fiction University, all three of which are really good, really, really good. A show that I borrow from heavily, I've been trying to get away from borrowing from them too much, The Majority Report and Dollimore Daily, The Majority Report, Sam Cedar, Emma Viglin, and the crew over there, and then Dollimore Daily, Jesse Dollimore and his wonderful life partner, Roland Martin Unfiltered, you know, former CNN guy, Roland Martin Unfiltered. Yo, man, support his work. Dude's doing it not only five times a week, but he's running a network, Black Star Network, and helping to produce really good content over there. Roland Martin Unfiltered on YouTube, Black Star Network on YouTube. The Bradcast, which I haven't got to check in on in a minute. The Nicole Sandler Show, the best progressive show that you are not listening to. the best progressive show that you are not listening to, the Nicole Sandler Show. Democracy Now, who doesn't know Democracy Now? The Karen Hunter Show, she should have a doctor in front of her name, but she's not a, quote, academic doctor. She isn't, but she is still a doctor. If you knew her, you would know what I'm talking about. In Class with Carr, another very black show, y'all. Best of the Left podcast, big up to Jay over there. Countdown with Keith Olbermann. Well, yeah, who wasn't watching Countdown with Keith Olbermann when he was on MSNBC? You know, his new show is right up there, so check it out. The Rational National, again, somebody who I borrow from heavily. The Young Turks, I got a little bone to pick with the Young Turks and this whole identitarian thing that they've been talking about. But other than that, you know, they're still doing their thing. I Mix What I Like, Dr. Jared Ball, what's up? Bo of the Fifth Column, I love Bo on the Fifth Column, man. That dude, one of the most logically reasonable people on YouTube. Seriously. Christopher Titus's Armageddon update. Man, I loved Titus. And I love the fact that Christopher Titus is talking about this stuff on a podcast. The Millennials Are Killing Capitalism podcast. Yeah. It's exactly what it sounds like. And it's good, y'all. The Dollop. I actually featured one of their episodes in a previous episode. I'd like to do a little bit more of that because the Dollop is phenomenal. It is phenomenal. It is an amazing history podcast that is very real, very funny. The two brothers who had it are just are geniuses. I'm so glad they did that. I am so glad they did that. And I want to give a special shout out to the Dollop because I was doing major overtime at two jobs ago. And I mean, I was getting crushed with overtime, and it really was the Dollop that helped me get through that. I was literally listening to like 5 or 10 episodes, you know, every day. And they got me through some very long days, so I want to thank them for that. Man, there is this one that they did on Billy Ball that is still, man, I could listen to that junk forever. It is so funny. That one and the ones they did on Ronald Reagan and John McCain. The John McCain one. All right, let me go because I'm running out of time here. Some more news. Tom Hartman Show. Who doesn't know Tom Hartman? Come on, y'all. Some More News. I love Some More News is phenomenal, too. I featured them on an episode a while ago. Lewis Black's Rant Cast. Leah Miller. Leftist Reckoning. Law and Disorder. These are all podcasts, y'all. American Constitution Society. Not a podcast, but a website. Check them out. Second Thought. That is a very left. A media outlet. Renegade Cuts. Man, I love Renegade Cuts. I love Renegade Cuts. That is one of the best channels on YouTube. I wish so many of these people, you know, if there is some billionaire with extra money, should really be funded. But Secular Talk, of course. Leftist Mafia. What a name, y'all. Leftist Mafia. What a name. The Radical Retriever, man. Oh, my God. I just rediscovered him. I had discovered him over the pandemic and really fell in love with this channel and then lost him for a while and just rediscovered him recently. Really good stuff. The Michael Parenti Library. If you don't know who Michael Parenti is, man, you don't know what you're missing. Tennessee Brando, just discovered him. The Humanist Report. And that's it. So, check all those people out. I know. I keep adding to the list so it gets longer. And so I'm doing like 15 minutes of promotion for these people. But really, I'm trying to give you guys some options when it comes to other media. So there you go. Again, my name is Vladimir Diesel Gaia. Questions, comments, concerns, you know you can always reach out to me. Radio, the number 4ALL.net. You can find my content exclusively there. I've tried with Spotify, with Anchor, and it just hasn't worked as well as y'all have helped it work. So, radio, the number 4ALL.net. Radio, the number 4ALL.net. Throw some money into the pot over there. Help them keep that project going. But you can contact me there. Just click into the show, and at the top you'll see contact the contributor. It's right next to Mahoka in Waco, Asili Temple, which technically is not affiliated with this podcast, but they wouldn't let me change it, so that's where I'm at. Anyway, click contact contributor, and you can zip right to me any message you want, and I'll get it. Outside of that, I'll see you on the next one. I've been waiting for something to happen for a week or a month or a year. Peace, y'all. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone.